Good morning, everyone. The Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting will come to order. If you have any audible devices, telephones, or PDAs, if you'd silence them now, as not to disrupt the rest of the meeting, we appreciate it. Would you stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All righty. Commissioner Gilman is noticeably absent, but he is en route. He's stuck in traffic, so he'll be a couple of minutes late. We're going to go ahead and we'll move along now to item number three, this discussion of possible action. This is approval of the agenda for this date, April the 4th, 2017. Is there any public comment regarding today's agenda? Hearing none, call for a motion for approval.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda for April 4th, 2017.
I'll second your motion. Been moved and seconded to approve the agenda for April the 4th, 2017. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. I'm moving along now to item number four, this discussion of possible action, approval of the minutes for February 21st, 2017. Is there any public comment regarding the minutes? Hearing none, motion for approval?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for February 21st, 2017.
All right. I'll second your motion. Been moved and seconded to approve the minutes for February the 21st, 2017. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number five, the consent agenda. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda?
Just one item, Mr. Chairman. Item number three, Roman numeral number three, with the canvas meeting set for April 12th, 2017. Subsequent to the printing and publishing of the agenda, we determined that the start time would be 10 a.m., the usual time.
Very good. Any other public comment regarding the consent agenda? Hearing none, get a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve today's consent agenda with the addition of 10 a.m. for item 3.
Thank you. Moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along now to item number 6, discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. Wait just one second here. Morning, Commissioner Gilman. We've only made our way through the introductory formalities there. We're moving on to committee and staff reports now. So we have Sean Griffin in attendance today. We have a report today on the library, community chest.
Good morning, Sean Griffin, Community Chest. Just on a personal note, huge thanks to Jack McGuffey for helping us restore the flooded basement of the Pink House. Thank you for that, sir. On April 14th, 2 weeks from last Friday, we're going to have Rodney Crowell at 8 o'clock. It's rapidly selling out. On Friday, the Wall Street Journal published an incredible review of his most recent album, a rave review. He won an Emmy a year ago with Emily Paris, so I'd encourage you all to come. It's our annual fundraiser for the first time. We have the show completely underwritten, which means every ticket that comes in, we make money. So it would be wonderful to see all of you there. It's going to be a great night. I've spoken to him twice. He is no stranger to music. He was married to Roseanne Cash. He's played with everybody who's anybody in music, contemporary music. So please join us.
Perfect. Great. Thanks, Sean.
I see you covered up my paint job with all that carpet.
Okay. The sheriff's office. Sheriff Antonoro? Emergency management director, Joe Curtis?
Nothing at this time, Chairman.
Thank you. Director of Communications, Mr. Ballard.
Nothing at this time.
Over at the VCTC, Kenny Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nothing.
Our IT director, Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
From the fire department, Fire Chief Ames, or?
I defer to Chief Nevin, and I have nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Community relations, Sherry Nevin. From community development, Mr. Haymore.
Yay, happy birthday.
Just real quick, a report that we had a nice groundbreaking yesterday for Studio 6. I was contacted last night and thanked for the county showing up and supporting that. Also, I was called by a major real estate developer and some investors that will close escrow on the rest of those lands, that 8 acres where the Studio 6 is going, in about 2 months. And then another developer with the same investors was going to close on some land on Electric and put some smaller units in. So going fine. Everything's working fast at Tesla and Switch. So we're busy out there, and we're happy to have the first hotel out there and hopefully 3 more coming.
Very good. Great. Thank you, Dave. Public Works Director, Jason Van Haven.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason Van Havel. Coming out of the winter time period, it's not unusual to have a rash of water leaks set in around town, Gold Hill, Silver City, and for the past couple of weeks we've had a disproportionate amount of time chasing these relatively minor and kind of nuisance leaks around town, but addressing those, making good progress. As far as the update on 6 Mile, the to-do list down there is getting particularly short, and I'm growing optimistic that we could open it sooner rather than later. I hesitate to offer any particular dates, but it's getting shorter rather than later on that one. So that's really all I have.
Okay. Any questions? No? Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Director of Security, Melanie Keener.
Thank you.
Director of Planning, Human Resources, Mr. Osborne. For our Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Deputy District Attorney, Mr. Loomis.
Nothing today, Mr.
Attorney. Mr. Attorney
Langer. Nothing today.
Yeah.
Joe, were you called up?
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Joe? Were you called up?
Yes, I was.
Oh, okay. We could have more people. Okay, so I think we got everybody.
County Manager Whitten.
Just one thing, Mr. Chairman. I can't let today pass without making a public note that a 22-plus-year public servant, Janet Arnold, will be retiring. Thursday is her last day. Janet came to work for the county on March 1st, 1995, beginning as a deputy assessor, progressed through to the administrative specialist group, and is currently the office manager for the assessor's office. She's given a tremendous amount of her life to the county and the citizens of the county, and will be missed. She's kind of one of those modest type of people that don't want parties, don't want plaques, don't really probably really want me to even be saying what I'm saying now, but she's been a constant dynamic presence for the county, and she'll be missed by many.
Thank you.
That's it.
County Clerk, Ms. Stevens? Nothing today? All right, that concludes our committee and staff reports. We'll move now on to item number 7. These are board comments. We'll take no action or public comment. Commissioner Gilman?
Yes, sir. Just 1 minute, please.
All righty.
Well, so the purpose of this formal public statement is to recuse myself from any agenda item concerning the appointment of an interim county sheriff between April 11, 2017 and November 6, 2018, if the for recall side prevails in the election on April 11, 2017. I also ask to be excluded from any interview process of applicants for the position of sheriff during that same time frame. While there is no conflict of interest present, which precludes me by law from participating in the employment process, I hope my recusal will provide reassurance to the public that any appointment of an interim sheriff, in the event the recall succeeds, will be done by the county administration and board of commissioners using arm's length vetting and appointment procedures without favor or prejudice to any purported private interest. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Coleman. Vice Chair McGuffey.
Okay. The biggest NACO news is international, and that would be that President Trump signed an executive order to repeal the BLM's Planning 2.0 initiative. That initiative was intended to bring counties together with BLM to be part of the process of decision-making of what goes on in your county. Well, when NACO received the proposal, it was pretty much cut and dried that BLM's going to do whatever BLM wants to do, and so NACO then jumped on it to kill it, and so that happened by President Trump signing. We had one of our NACO members, Jim French, there at the signing. So that was a good thing for everyone. So it's back to the drawing board for BLM. On a local note, I'd like to announce that with the help of the Highlands 1s and 10s associations, their presidents, Jay Carmona and James Hoyt, and County Manager Pat Whitten, and the Planning Director Austin Osborne, and myself, have made progress towards building or proposing to build a community center in the Highlands. And having it added to the capital projects list doesn't mean it's going to happen right now or anything. We still have a lot of groundwork to do. We just discussed the property, the site, who's going to run it, and who's going to, how it's going to be funded. So there's a lot of things. But basically, we took the first step, said yes, the Highlands wants to have a community center, so they're not having their meetings in the a building that smells like diesel, you know, and plus the heater, when the heater kicks on, you can't hear yourself talk. So anyway, that's a big thing for the Highlands. And of course, the county is behind us on this move too. We also discussed the parking and the speeding issues near the school bus stop and the mailboxes there. There were questions related to the speed limit enforcement versus a county road assessment that's in a statute that came forward. We're still looking into that. We're going to have hopefully the DA's office kind of confirm some of those questions there. And along with we need to confirm the boundaries that we have in that area. We've agreed to sit down once a month, preferably the first week of the month,
and kind of hash over any other issues that's related to the Highlands and or progress, or status of the projects we want to do out there. That's it.
Great. Thanks, Commissioner McGuffey. I don't have anything today, so we'll go ahead and move on now to item number 8. This is discussion only, and we'll take no action on this. Discussion and direction to staff regarding legislation or legislative issues proposed by legislators or by other entities permitted by the Nevada State Legislature to submit bill draft requests for such legislative issues as may be deemed by the chairman or the board to be critical significance to Story County. Specific bills will include SB 57, which staff has expressed full support, and bills AB 271, AB 350, AB 354, AB 888, SB 289, SB 314, SB 389, and SB 477.
If I may start while Mr. Osborne comes up, who has taken on several of these bills and others. I'll start first off with one that's not on the list, and that is now Senate Bill 439, formerly introduced as BDR 1002. That's on the 5-cent diesel tax option. That has its first committee hearing today. And we'll see where it goes. It is enabling legislation. It does not institute the tax. It just allows each county board of commissioners to institute up to a nickel on diesel sales, which are currently tax-free to the local governments. The other one that is noted is SB 57. I would tell you this bill is in peril. And we discussed this at the last meeting. Their project director, Candace Duncan, decided to take it upon herself to write to the committee chair, Senator Parks. Senator Parks reacted. This bill is really just stalled in committee currently. We're trying everything we can. Washoe County has advised Senator Parks that despite what Ms. Duncan has said, that they do not want to be on the commission anymore. Douglas County has done the same in writing. And Commissioner McGuffey and I are going to strive to meet both with Senator Parks and also Senator Settlemyer to see if we can get it moved out of committee successfully and onto the floor before the deadlines. And those are the two updates that I have.
Great. Mr. Osborne, do you want to follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. There's a long list of bills, but I'm not going to talk about that long list. I'll keep it pretty short and just give you a little summary of what's going on with some labor bills as well as some land use bills. AB 271, that's the Factfinder bill. This is a bill that would, instead of when you come to an impasse in a collective bargaining agreement right now, you have the option to go to no-cost federal mediation services, and then after that you have a fact finder look at the facts. And at that point, the parties would have one more chance to make an agreement or not before arbitration. And so this bill would eliminate that and just make the fact finder have the final say in the bill. I did testify on this one. I wrote testimony as well. The biggest problem really with this is eliminating the chances for the parties to once again come to an agreement between that point of impasse and arbitration. The sponsor of the bill thinks that this will save money by eliminating the fact finder, but really a study has shown that this is very rare that you actually even go to all of the steps. Usually there's some kind of agreement made in between. So far the bill is still moving along. It had a hearing on March 23rd. Here's another bill, AB 350. When you have a new hire for employees, you have an orientation period. This is when you show them the paperwork and they take some online trainings, and they do their I-9s and things like that. And the bill would require that 30 minutes of that orientation period, the union has to be there during the orientation to do union business. We really feel that it's more important for unions to use their existing rights to go ahead and do the business as they do and not during the orientation period. And probably more important is this bill makes orientation subject to bargaining in a collective bargaining agreement. SB 88 is the body camera fund. So far, that seems to be moving along. I testified on that, provided testimony. And this is just a fund at the state level that would allow jurisdictions to tap into that to fund the body camera program. if that body camera program becomes required for the counties and cities, which that bill appears to be looking like it's moving along just fine. SB 289 is called out-of-network. Right now, when you have your health benefits insurance, you have in-network doctors, you have out-of-network doctors. Essentially, in-network are doctors that negotiated with the insurance companies to come up with a lower rate. And then the out-of-network doctors don't. They don't come up with that agreement. This bill would require that the county or the insurance company actually pay for the person to go to an out-of-network doctor, and that payment would be up to the 80th percentile of cost of other out-of-network doctors in the state. This is obviously a problem. LP Insurance, our insurance broker, did a cost feasibility analysis with this with an actuary that they hired. They looked at four large employers in the state, analyzed them, and came up with an up to 8.5% increase potential in health benefits premiums for employees and for employers. Another problem with this is there is concern that by having this situation that those doctors that bargained with the insurance company for in-network benefits, they may say, well, I know I'm going to get paid either way, so I'm not going to go ahead and bargain. We may not end up with any in-network doctors, and there's two discussions on whether that really would occur or not. So that bill did have a hearing yesterday, testified on that, and it does appear to be moving forward, but it looks like there's probably some adjustments. There's a lot of testimony for, a lot of testimony against, and some testimony in neutral for that bill. SB 314 is the wind energy bill. Mr. Hess testified on that on my behalf, and this would make it where a county can't put height limitations necessarily on wind energy. That bill seems to be getting morphed into something that might be more palatable. SB 389 is the alien info bill. This one doesn't appear to be getting any traction at all. It hasn't had any hearings. This would prohibit a local employer from providing certain information to the federal government regarding alien status of an employee, and there's obviously some issues with that. SB 477, this is the residential care zoning bill. There's provisions for this for disabled persons. There's also provisions in this for drug rehab, halfway houses, alcoholic rehab centers, and group homes. This is a bill that would eliminate the county's decision to eliminate a special use permit or to deny a special use permit. This bill would also define these uses as single-family residential uses. There's some provisions for that potentially could cause water issues for places like the Highlands if one of these types of uses were to be out there and you have up to 10 people living in a group home on a domestic well and domestic septic. There's obviously zoning implications for it as far as proper placement of high-intensity uses, not only for the numbers of people and traffic associated therewith, but also with the types of uses. So there was comment provided on this bill, and it seems to be it'll probably morph, but we'll see where this ends up. It had a hearing on April 5th. And then last but not least, SB 244. This is the historic digging bill. This is not necessarily a bad bill. What it is the tribal organizations in the state are having issues when remains are found in a construction site or otherwise. Right now the state comes into play. And the state then goes and they'll shut a project down and they'll require permitting for an archaeological dig. And the tribes have discussed even instances where not only does the state cause a lot of issues, but the state doesn't report to the tribes about the burial or the dig. And then the remains, instead of going to the tribe to be treated the way the tribe would like, they're going to museums, storage facilities, or otherwise treated where the tribes don't feel as appropriate. Probably the problem with this bill, the most important thing, is that the word prehistoric is all over the bill. That's fine. Nobody really argues about should the tribes have the right to the remains for prehistoric artifacts. But there's some language in here that may have been put in by some people that are anti-mining or anti-other digs that says just historic resources. And that could be interpreted to be all the way to if somebody were to plant a tree in their yard, they'd have to get permitting to do a dig. There would be all kinds of implications like that. Mr. Hess and I have been working with a group sponsoring the bill, also testifying that we're not against the bill. We like the bill. That's fine. But we would like the word historic to be clarified to only be prehistoric, including in the definitions. The groups have seemed to be receptive to that, and they also want that. And that bill should probably be cleaned up before it moves forward. So it's looking pretty positive.
Is there any questions for Austin regarding any of these bills? No?
Okay.
That's great. Thanks for the update.
Awesome. You're welcome. That's
so good. All right. Moving along now to item number 9, discussion of possible action. This is consideration of possible action to authorize Public Works Department to commence proceedings to remove obstructions on Sutro Springs Road, located on property bearing APN 004-291-28. And having a street address of 269 Edith Lane in the Mark Twain area of Story County.
Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is as much an informational item as it is a request for authorization for the Department of Public Works. But we have been dealing with an issue down at 269 Edith Lane as a result of some obstructions being placed upon what is considered an extension of the Sutro Springs Road. That is a road that research has shown has existed as far back as 1869, which is this is the 1869 map. If we go to a map that was done in 1923, the same road will be depicted on that map as well. And we tried to get this smoothed out yesterday, but we could not get the AV system working. So we had a couple minutes this morning. We may skip the visual part of this if it's not going to work out well. But in any event, it's shown on a map in 1923. In 1995, a request was made for a map for large parcels to divide the area just to the north of the main Mark Twain area into 40-acre parcels. The tentative map for that proposal showed the Sutro Springs Road crossing the 40-acre parcels. It was removed from the final map except for a small portion in the northeast corner of that map, which identified it as a traveled roadway. It has since been identified on a number of maps, including the USGS maps, as an existing roadway going through that area. We've had two landowners exercise a right that they have under Chapter 405 to identify that roadway as access to their properties to the northeast and basically to the northeast areas of that area. The road has been used by a number of people in the Mark Twain community to get access to BLM lands. They walk their dogs there. They take their four-wheel drives. They take their quads out in that area. And so it's been used for a lengthy period of time, both before and after the 1995 large parcel map was established. In October of 2016, one of the 40-acre parcels, the 269 Edith Lane, was purchased by the Thomases, and they began a process of excluding people from using the roadway where it crossed their 40-acre parcel. That involved numerous complaints to the sheriff's office of trespassers utilizing the area. Our office wrote a letter to the Thomases advising them that obstructing the roadway potentially could be a misdemeanor charge. We asked them to remove the obstructions. They ignored that letter. They hired an attorney, and the attorney sent us a letter advising of their position on the thing. We responded with a letter telling them that, no, we're not going to prosecute anybody using that roadway as a trespasser because, in our view, it's a public roadway. So that's kind of where we're at now. There is provision under Chapter 405 that the Public Works Department, we would send the landowner a notice, personal service of the notice, telling them you've got 5 days to remove the obstruction. If you don't remove it, the Public Works Department has the authority to go in and remove the obstruction. There is then an opportunity to recover the costs incurred by the Public Works Department as well as the any attorney's fees incurred, costs of suit that may be incurred, that can be recovered from the landowner if they refuse to remove the obstruction. Now, I see this as ultimately going to result in litigation over whether or not that's a public roadway. But I think this is the first step. My office and our office obviously does not have the authority to tell the Public Works Department what to do. And so what we're asking is that the board authorize the Public Works Department to remove that obstruction in concurrence with the district attorney's office. I would say that the question really is, should a private landowner go ahead and litigate this issue because it's access to certain private parcels? And my view on that is that it's used by a fair proportion of the Mark Twain community for access to the public. It seems to be more of a community issue than a private landowner's issue, and so that's why I brought the issue before the board and am asking for that authority.
Okay.
So what does their attorney, how do you think he's, which side of the fence is he on? Does he agree with you, or?
No.
Okay. And for what reason, you know?
Well, I think the main issue comes up due to the fact that the large parcel map that was approved by the county does not show that roadway except in a small portion of the northeast corner of the map. And so by approving that map, did we somehow eliminate the public roadway that existed there? I mean, I think that's going to be the issue. There is a statutory process for vacating a public roadway that was not utilized in the course of approving that map. And like I say, the
and Keith, that's the 1995 map, correct?
Right, that's the 1995 map. And the roadway has been used consistently after that map was approved by members of the public. And so I think there's a question both of prescriptive right as well as what we call an RS-2477 roadway that was never properly vacated in the process of approving that large parcel map.
How much damage might the opening of the road do to the 40-acre parcel?
Well, and that's, they have, Mr. Kelly Chase is the attorney for the landowners. They say that they are looking, they have asked the title company to take a look at this to see if they'll get involved in any litigation. But what you'll see on most title insurance policies is that the policies do not insure against things that are open and notorious on the ground. And that roadway has been there for 100 years. So it is open and notorious to anyone that might actually go out and take a look at the land. And that's typically something that would not be covered by title insurance.
What would be the damage, if anything, to the 40-acre parcel?
Well, if it's not covered by title insurance, it's not by itself a damage. It's an existing right-of-way. They obviously are contending that it's not an existing right-of-way. It's private property, and so the reopening of this roadway would constitute some amount of damage to the title or the value of the property.
Do we have an actual picture of the right-of-way roadway as it impacts the 40-acre parcel?
We have. Let's go to the list. Yeah. Oh, is that on there? This is the tentative map for the large parcels, and if you see this roadway here, it's the roadway that has been there for quite some time, and that's the roadway that we're considering the extension of the Sutra Springs roadway. Let's go to the next one. No, it's the next slide.
Is that showing two different parcels there?
It's showing probably eight different parcels.
Oh, okay.
Which one do you want?
Let's do a highlighted harbor map. This is a map that was recorded in the recorder's office in approximately 2002. So this was after the map of large parcels was recorded. The area that's highlighted there within the circle is the area that includes the Sutro Springs roadway where it crosses. This was recorded by the Harpers to show that they use this roadway for access to the parcel, which is to the northwest. There's another similar map like this that was recorded by Mr. Thomas Zachary to show access using this roadway to his property, which is a little bit further to the northeast. Let's go to the next. Let's go back to the list. Let's do... This is a record of survey recorded by Jack Randall, which shows the which shows the let me just if you see the dotted line there. It's right here, you'll see this described as the access road, and this goes down across the 40 acres and to the Mark Twain subdivision area. That was recorded in approximately, when was that, Mr. Zachary?
2002-2003.
So these are the roadways that have been depicted on the maps. Let's go back to the list here.
Is there a residence on this property?
There is. This is a photo, a recent photo of the roadway, which shows the obstruction, which consists of a number of large boulders going across and placed in the roadway that were placed there within the last couple months.
Unmaintained road, correct?
Correct.
Is it a state road or a county road?
Well, I'd call it a county road, a county public highway or access road, which is referenced in chapters 405 and 403 of the Nevada Revised Statutes. That the RS 2477 roadway is goes back into history, and in 1866 they passed the purse of the mining laws that authorized the use of authorized the conveyance of a patent to an existing mine. A different part of that statute authorized the, said any public highways in open use are hereby conveyed by the federal government to the states. That has been characterized as a dedication of public roadways wherever they may have existed. And this is one that we can trace it back to 1869, I think. If you go back into the surveyor notes reference roadways in the area, which are not, it wasn't a complete survey at the time. They did portions of the survey over a period of a number of years, but the survey notes indicate the existence of this roadway in the area. It was in the title to the property belonged to the federal government at the time the roadway existed. That would make it a conveyance under the 1866 mining law, which was later became referred to as Revised Statute 2477. It was conveyed from federal land to private ownership in about, I believe it was in the 50s, and the road remained in place, it was used, it's used to this day.
Is some form of litigation imminent on this roadway?
I know that the owners of the property have brought petitions for temporary protective orders against three of the neighbors, requesting that the court issue protective orders, keeping them off the property. That's going to be heard on Thursday. Other than that, that's not going to establish title to the roadway. They are saying that they are being harassed by the local people using the roadway. So it's not going to establish title to the roadway. But the process that may be initiated here today is what I would ultimately see as establishing title to the roadway.
So that's in the future. That's forthcoming.
Yes.
To establish title. But so what you're asking here of the commission is that we have the barriers removed.
Authorize the Public Works Department to remove the barriers in conjunction with the request from the DA's office. So, you know, how we're exactly going to proceed is not quite clear yet, but we would like to have the authority to have those barriers removed if it looks like that's the best way to proceed.
We're not to public comment, but we will get you, Tom, okay? Is there any indication that the most previous map that was recorded, there was an oversight that this road was eliminated from it, or could it have been deliberate that it was recorded without?
Well, I talked to Dean Haymore. He was planning director at the time. He can verify this. I took the maps down to him and said, one of the conditions on the approval of the large parcel map was that there be cul-de-sacs at the end of Sutra Springs Road, Edith Lane and LaFawn Lane, and that the developer placed no trespassing signs so that the only people who could use the roadways were the residents of the 40-acre parcels. In discussing that with Dean Haymore, he indicated that he was unaware that Sutra Springs Road was a public road at the time, and looking at the maps, I think he would agree that it looks like it was a public roadway.
And so, since it is a indication it was a public road, what is the how far away is the residence in proximity to the road?
I believe it's about 300 to 400 feet.
The county will be taking a position in this settlement that's forthcoming, and is that enhanced by a removal of the obstructions? Or are we doing, as you see it, our responsibility under the requirements of county government?
Well, it's the interpretation of our office that Sutra Springs Road is a public roadway that is not subject to being blocked by the owners of the property with due process. And so, you know, that we could initiate it by leaving the barriers there. But they took the action to place the barriers within the last couple of months rather than seeking to get title to the property established. That's been a burden on the community in the area, and that's why we think that it ought to be removed and then have the title established. But in our view, it is a public roadway.
So it appears to me if there is NRS statute that directs us to follow that direction at the county.
I don't think it says you have to. I think it's our opinion, that our office's opinion, that it is a public roadway, and there is authority within the statutes to ask the Public Works Department to remove the obstructions.
Does this road, have they restricted access from property owners beyond their property?
The obstructions are on 269 Edith Lane, so to the extent that you can get up to the obstructions and then go back, you're not being prohibited.
But I'm saying that with or without obstructions, you got this road that goes, looks like it goes northeast or whatever.
Right.
Okay, so I don't know what the litigant's property is or where their boundaries, but there's properties north of that. This road, closing this road, does it eliminate access to property owners north of that?
Yes.
Okay. Because that's what the intent of the law in 1889 that you mentioned was to allow these miners access to their mines. or their property.
Just any public way that was being used by the public was conveyed.
Is Lori Thomas, her husband, in the audience today? Anybody representing the Thomases in the audience today? No? Maybe we can take public comment on this. Mr. Zachary, you had your hand up. Did you want to come up and speak?
I need you
to come up, sir. This is our regular routine. If you'll come up to the podium and then identify yourself for the record, that way our most able transcribers in the clerk's office can go, or the commissioner's office can go ahead and get this all down for the record. Thank you.
Okay. My name's Tom Zachary. I own 80 acres up at Sutro Springs, that, and I've been using this road for over 44 years. This road, where it goes across and goes up there, and there's two places where there are two little roads that go up into Section 17, that one and the one over here, give access to my property and Tony Harper's property, and those were, well, that those roads are still the only access to Tony Harper's property. I have established another access, but that was the only access to my property until 1973. I've used that road a lot. If this is allowed to be blocked, you can't get there. I go up North Pine Nut Road through on Basalite's road. That is a private road. That was established by Basalite. They bought the easement. They built the road. And they can put people off of there anytime they want. There were houses on our properties and people using that road to go there before this courthouse was built. The initial survey of the township in 1867 crosses the road farther up in Section 4 and in the surveyor notes designates it as an old road. Later, as the surveys were done in 1875, the inter part of this was not, had not been surveyed. It was still all public land. There were houses on both of our properties in 1875. They were there before that. All of this land down here was still federal land, and those roads were established to access our property. They don't go through our property. They don't leave that valley up by the springs. Those roads go through there to our properties. They're shown on the map very clearly in the 1923 map that's hanging in every office in this county, or used to be. Any questions from any of you that I could answer?
No, I don't think so. Thank you, Mr.
I've been doing this all my adult life. You know, I bought that property when I was 27 years old. It's been a while.
Is all your property in Story County?
Yes, sir.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Zachary.
Thank you.
All right. Any other public comment?
Thank you, Jason Van Havel, Public Works Director. I just want to make sure that we don't have any, regardless of whatever action is taken today, there's no unintended consequences to the county of having any potential obligation to maintain this road in the future, that we don't accidentally have any implications like that. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
It'll remain a non-maintained road.
Any follow-up, Mr. Loomis?
I just might add that, and Mr. Zachary can correct me if I'm wrong, but this area over here is BLM land, and that's public land, which a lot of people use that roadway for access to, this area over here.
Section 16.
Section 16 here, okay. And Section 17, I believe, is private land owned by the Bordas. So the road is used for access to this public land in Section 16.
The easement that was provided...
Come on up, Mr. Zachary.
It's not only access to his property, it's also to public land.
Right.
The easement that was provided, these lots on, when the final map came, they're a little different. But the center line in the center of that half section, next to lot four here, down at the bottom, there's a 50-foot easement that goes through there, a public easement. But it dead ends into the border's property. It does not connect with any roads. It just is a 50-foot border easement.
On that map, can you pinpoint where the block is?
All across lot number four on this map. It starts in the beginning at the cul-de-sac. This isn't exactly the way the final map came out, but it starts at that cul-de-sac and goes all the way across lot number four, which is really now not lot number three. Yeah.
Any other questions? No?
Seems to me the preponderance of the evidence suggests that it's a public right-of-way, a public road, so it would seem to me that this board would have the ability to give the authorization to have the barriers removed until such time as the roadway is identified through some formal process, which is probably going to take place anyway.
Right. So anyway.
Do you agree, Mr. Loomis?
I do.
Yep. So it's the DA's recommendation. So, any other public comment on this item? Hearing none, we can get a motion to go forward.
Okay. I move to authorize the Public Works Department at the request of the District Attorney's Office to commence proceedings to remove obstructions from the Sutro Springs Road located at or near 269 Edith Lane.
Second. We move to second to go ahead and to authorize the Public Works Department at the request of the District Attorney's Office to commence proceedings to remove obstructions from Sutro Springs Road located at 269 Edith Lane. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
It's...
Thank you, Mr.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Zachary, for attending today and giving us some insight on this. So the more information we have, the better it works out for us.
I do have more information if you need it. I'd be glad to help.
Okay.
And I would also be glad to help in other similar issues in that area.
Okay.
I've been doing this.
Okay. If we go on any further, you're going to have to come back up to the podium because this all has to be recorded. Thank you. All right, we're going to move on now to item number 10. This is discussion of possible action. Possible action to require first reading of an ordinance to repeal Chapter 8.32 of Story County Code addressing hazardous materials and toxic substances.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Loomis, Story County District Attorney's Office. This kind of came up as a result of a meeting that county officials had with the AUECC, which is a company proposing to locate in the old Alcoa building in the McCarran area of the county, and it's there they are intending to refine highly hazardous materials. As a result of that meeting, I went through the county ordinances to see what the process was going to be, and came across ordinance 8.3 or chapter 8.32, which is a chapter dealing with hazardous materials and toxic waste. What it does is it creates a hazardous materials board composed of six members of the county, which would include the fire chief, the sheriff, the director of public works, the emergency management coordinator, and a couple of other people. And so in discussing with Joe Curtis, he indicated that he wasn't aware of the existence of the board, though he would be on it. In discussing it with Gary Haynes, he indicated that he had believed that that ordinance had been repealed some time ago. I wasn't aware that it was still in existence. His office did a little research and found out that it still exists. The board has the authority to issue permits for use of hazardous materials within the county. They have authority to take policing actions, inspection actions, regulatory actions. They're authorized to adopt regulations to control the use and handling of hazardous materials within the county. There are some criminal sanctions associated with it, but it apparently has never been utilized. And so In discussing with Joe Curtis, would he be in favor of or against repealing the chapter? He indicated that his office is in favor of repeal of the chapter, as is Gary Haim's office. And so this is before you today to decide whether or not you want to proceed with the first reading of the ordinance, which would repeal Chapter 8.32.
So this is basically just housekeeping, as we've been doing for the last 5 years. Longer even than that, right? Is there any public comment on this?
I was going to ask, so is there something in place that kind of handles this issue?
The state has the authority, has the existing authority to address hazardous materials operations within the county, and they were at that meeting with the AUECC explaining their process for issuing hazardous material permits. So there is regulatory authority in the state as well as the federal government to regulate the uses that might be made of hazardous materials.
Okay, so then hazardous materials just falls back to the state if we had an issue here? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, yes.
Okay.
Any other public comment? So, we have a recommended motion there.
Yeah.
Okay,
I got
that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keith, so I want to understand a bit more on this regulation would appear to me to set a board within the county to regulate our own environment, so to speak. We
yes.
have a certain level of control of what comes into our county. And if we no longer have this chapter in place, then we're going to rely on the state to oversee our destiny under development?
To some extent, yes, that's true. We would be advocating some county control over the hazardous materials. Now, I think under the International Fire Code, the 2012 edition, the fire district has additional authority over hazardous materials being utilized within the county. Perhaps Chief Haynes is going to expound on that.
Yeah, I'd like to know a bit more because I kind of start from a foundational piece that putting our destiny in the hands of others is not necessarily in our best interest. So I, how come?
If I may, Mr. Chairman. Gary Haynes for the record, Story County Fire Protection District Fire Chief. This is an interesting ordinance. This was developed in 1989. Mid to late 80s, there were a lot of issues with hazardous materials, products coming in and throughout the nation. Once that was addressed, there was like a mad rush, almost like the mining days, to write ordinances and statutes. Simultaneously to us writing this, the state started writing their ordinances. They came out about the same time the state implemented all of the permitting processes. When we looked at this in the early 90s, since they had done that prior to us, we didn't feel that it was equitable or fair to companies to come in and have to have two permits. So they now report to the state. We have direct input into the state archives. We're the ones that monitor all of those field inspections, if you will. The other part of that ordinance, which was instrumental, was the establishment of the board. We've kind of gone a different direction with that. It's now in the hands of the local emergency planning committee. So there is a board in place that functions well, as you well know. I mean, you've attended those meetings.
The planning department and a special use permit process.
Correct. The special use permit process as well as the local emergency planning committee. The local emergency planning committee does review all facilities that come into the county. So we do have direct input. The way that we manage that and regulate it now is through the 2012 International Fire Code, which we have very specific regulations and ordinances, which actually circumvent the existing policy. That's why I thought it was not in existence. When Mr. Morris and I went through the adoption of the 2012 International Fire Code, I thought that we had gotten rid of the 8.32, if I'm not mistaken. So it was an oversight. We've essentially done this in a different process, and not necessarily adhered to 8.32. What we've done is we've adopted modern fire codes and the local emergency planning committee. So we do have direct authority and access and, if you will, ordinances and codes that support our actions locally. We control this locally. The state tracks it on a statewide basis, But again, we have direct access into that through our interlocal agreement with the Nevada State Fire Marshal's Office. So all of that responsibility is put back on to us through that interlocal agreement anyway, and the use of International Fire Code. Okay. Hopefully I answered that.
So in the event that GOAD and the state were to identify a company that they would like to see in the state of Nevada, and more specifically in Story County, would they then have the ability to override and place that company in our midst?
No.
Are we giving up that?
Absolutely not. That's where the 2012 Fire Code comes into effect. We've adopted all those ordinances. Chapter 50 speaks specifically to hazardous materials. That's strictly and solely in our control. All the state really does is once we've approved it, either through an SUP or if it doesn't require an SUP, through the fire district plan review process, once we've given approval, then they track it. They're just a warehouse. Did I answer your question?
It does. I suppose the reason that I'm hesitant is I'm aware of, because of our county placement in the industrial world, that, and I'm sure we all know and we work with it, that we have the very high probability of having to deal with these kinds of elements. So I just want to make absolutely certain that we're all on the same page, that we don't give up a control level that I think is very important for the health, safety, and welfare of the county and all of the business.
I couldn't agree more. And I think you've seen us, that process followed well when we've issued fines and citations. That was all through the 2012 International Fire Code adoption. We have facilities out there every day that have hazardous materials, and that's how we've been managing them, is through the 2012. So the 8.32 chapter really existed without our knowledge, and we've never adhered to it, to be quite honest. We've done it through the 2012 International Fire Code. Well, and we did know it existed. I mean, Bob and I went through that, and again, I'm not sure how that got dropped when we adopted the 2012, but it did get dropped. I thought it was already deleted out of code, because if you'll remember, we got rid of Chapter 8.4 in lieu of adopting the 2012, and I thought we got rid of 8.32 as well.
Well, I've always kind of worked under a personal philosophy that when there is problems or trouble in any kind of a transactional process, then you go back to the written word, and that's your guiding element. So I've never been real comfortable in taking that clause out of that level of control. So, Austin, maybe you could address that from a planning department standpoint or other agencies that give us similar control under the aspects of our county and those who join us.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. Austin Osborne for the record. I think Chief Haynes really explained quite well as far as his jurisdiction and all of that. I'm going to keep mine very simple. I really think it's the special use permit process that we have and the listed uses in the special use permit category that are going to be most important to us when you're dealing with these sorts of uses. A lot of the state agencies are going to regulate the use, but they're not going to necessarily stop a use or place a use where appropriate. That really is going to be deferred to the local jurisdiction, and the local jurisdiction is going to use its ordinances for that purpose.
If I may, Gary Hames again. Just as an example, the AUECC process has to go through the CAP, the chemical process through the state. The state won't even hear that until they have a special use permit issued by the county. So that's another check and balances, and I think that speaks directly to having local control, is the state's not even willing to hear any of these chemical facilities until we've issued a special use permit. So I think that gives us the reassurances that we really are in control of our own destiny at a local level.
So I guess my last question is to Pat. And Pat, do you have any particular position or overview on this from your chair?
Yeah, I would have a tendency to support repeal. Right now, we have a process on the books that we're not following. We have a process that is addressed through the 2012 code and through NDEP. As far as their processes through the Chemical Accident Prevention Program that Chief Ames referred to, the CAP, and seeing it firsthand in multiple meetings with AUECC and DEP and our team, I think we're well positioned to make sure that we do control our own destiny and then allow NDEP to provide the expertise to monitor that we don't have.
Thank you. I'm good.
You comfortable going forward now?
So far, I feel good.
Okay. I'll ask once more if there's any other public comment.
And let me just, if I may, give you an analogy on the side. If you look at mining operations, and in particular Comstock Mining, we talked an awful lot about AUECC. Comstock Mining has their permits that they follow through here, but then enforcement goes out to folks like NDEP, MSHA, and other agencies that apply them once we have permitted. So there, it's really a similar path on the hazmat side as it is to the mining side, in my opinion.
Okay. I get a motion for ask for it 12 times.
Is everybody else at the top?
Yeah. All right. I'll make a motion to hear the first reading, accept the first reading of Ordinance 17-274 and require publishing and hearing of the ordinance as required by statute.
I'll second.
Okay. We moved a second to go ahead and hear the first reading of Ordinance 17-274. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. Two.
Well, that's one of the appeals.
Okay. We don't need to use these words. We don't need to use chapter.
Yes. I'm going to ask you.
Okay. All right. Good.
So at this point, Mr. Chairman, we ask you to read the title of the proposed ordinance. 243.
Okay.
243? I thought it was.
273.
I motion 274. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess we'll have to hold off until the next county commission meeting, Mr. Chairman.
For the actual first reading?
Yes.
Okay. It's not in here. Okay. So we're continuing because it is not in here for you to read, and it needs to be read into the record. So we'll continue where we are on this and just move it forward and add the information. Correct?
Correct.
All right.
So this would be a first reading kind of sort of, and then we'll have a second first reading.
This is what
it happens. Don't even start because we're doing that next on the next one. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Everybody
okay,
breathe.
Very good. All right. At this time, we're going to go ahead and recess as the Story County Commission and go ahead and convene as the Story County Liquor License Board. We're going to rehash our last meeting. We went ahead and had a little procedural snafu. And this is item 12, discussion of possible action. This is Liquor Board, second reading, A, the Bonanza Saloon Liquor License operating at 27 North C Street, Virginia City, Nevada. Tina Perkins is the leasee. For the record, I am a license for liquor at my establishment, which is in proximity to the Bonanza Saloon. My voting on this no more goes benefits myself or any others who are licensed in the same manner in that area. So, Mr. Gilman,
I give the same disclosure. you just gave, as I own a business in close proximity to the Bonanza, and I believe I have the responsibility to vote on these.
Okay. Any public comment? Motion for approval.
Ask the sheriff. Do we need to ask the sheriff?
He's right there.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I'll make a motion to approve the liquor license second reading for the Bonanza Saloon operated by Tina Perkins, leasee at 27 North C Street, Virginia City, Nevada.
Motion. Have a second.
Second.
A motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Did you ask for public comment?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Thank you for checking on me.
Yeah.
Okay. At this time, we're going to go ahead and adjourn as the Story County Liquor Board and reconvene as the Story County Board of Commissioners. Thank you, Sheriff. Item number 14, discussion of possible action. This is the Sheriff's Licensing Board. Second reading is Bonanza Saloon, General Businesses, and Cabaret License operating at 27 North C Street, Virginia City, Nevada, Tina Perkins, lessee. Also, this is correcting a procedural error made at the last meeting. Once again, for total disclosure, I also, in business, have a general business license and cabaret license in this proximity to the Bonanza Saloon, and my voting on this wouldn't grant me or any other business in the area any difference. So, Commissioner Gilman?
I'm sorry.
You want to disclose that you also have a business?
I also have a business in close proximity to the Bonanza, and I believe I have a responsibility to vote on this issue.
Very good. Any public comment? Hearing none, I get a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve the second reading for the Bonanza Saloon General and Cabaret License operated by Tina Perkins, B.C. at 27 North C Street, Virginia City, Nevada.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Does anybody need a break before we go on to the budget? Are we good to go? Okay. Why don't we go ahead and we'll take about a 5-minute recess.
Yeah.